Great. Okay. So last week we still have some mikorot to look over from last week. So let's take a look at those. Let me just share the screen here. Okay. So the topic that we were discussing last week was the buying of the bechorah, the selling of the bechorah, the birthright. And the whole question was raised whether it is at all possible to sell something that has no existence independently in the world. That is to say, it doesn't take force until Yitzhak dies. In a larger sense, you might even ask, can you sell birth order, right? Can you sell something that was ordained by God a particular way? Hang on. I'm just trying to make it so that there's no reflection from the light. So the whole question is, can one sell the bechorah? Can one buy the bechorah? Can you buy a birthright? Can you sell a birthright? What does emerge, though, pretty clearly from this encounter between Yaakov and Esav is that Esav really doesn't want the bechorah, or he doesn't really care about the bechorah. And the relevant pasuk there is Esav et ha-bechorah. If we go back, I believe the psukim are, no, they're not here. We'll take a look at Bereishit Chafei. If we look at that's Genesis 25, I'll tell you the exact pasuk in a minute. Hang on. Here we are. Pasuk Lamed Daled, verse 34. It's the last verse in the pasuk. V'Yaakov Natan. Everybody have it? V'Yaakov Natan le'Esav lechem u'nezid adashim. And Yaakov gave Esav bread and a soup of lentils. V'yochal v'yesh v'yakam v'yelach. And he ate and he drank and he got up and he left. Vayivez Esav et ha-bechorah. The Torah testifies that Esav despised or degraded the birthright. Okay, so for Esav, the birthright is not terribly important. The birthright is not the point of things. And we looked at various commentators who talk about why that would be the case. If Esav is a man who lives very much in the moment, and that's all that is of importance to him, then the idea of inheriting something that will only be of utility to his children, or will only come into force after he dies, or he's afraid his life will be too short for him to even get to the birthright. If you say that the birthright only comes into force after his father's death, his lifestyle is such, the way he lives his life, his profession is such that he endangers himself every day, and he's very much afraid he won't live to inherit the birthright. So if that's the case, for Esav, the birthright is of almost no utility. It doesn't matter to him in any way, as opposed to Yaakov, for whom the birthright is attached to the service of God, the future of his children, his descendants as a nation. It's attached to the inheritance of Eretz Yisrael, which he will not see, but his descendants will see. It's really a kind of, to use a very well-worn phrase, a kind of clash of civilizations here. Yaakov represents one way of thinking about the world. Esav represents another. And here, we also discussed the fact that, according to the Rashbam and others, the sale of the Bechorah, the price of the Bechorah, the price of the birthright was not the soup. The Yaakov agreed to pay Esav money for the birthright, and the lechem u'nezid adashim, the meal that Yaakov gives him afterwards, is actually a kind of celebratory meal or a meal to mark the occasion of the sale of the birthright. And here I want to do with you a couple of things. We're going to do basically the Alshich and the Malbim here. We'll skip the HaMikdavar because I want to get to the other material as well. Okay, so we Yaakov says, sell me the birthright. Esav says, I'm going to die anyway. What do I need the birthright for? Yaakov says, promise me, promises, and he sells the birthright. And Yaakov Natan Leesav Lechem Unezid Adashim, and Yaakov gave Esav bread and soup. And here the Alshich says something quite fascinating. That would never occur to me, at least. Hinei Esav Amar Haliteni. Remember, we said Esav says, pour into me, right? We talked about how the use of this word Haliteni doesn't occur elsewhere in Tanakh, and it's the manner in which one feeds camels, right? You like sort of force their mouths open and you pour the food into their mouths. Okay. Esav said, Haliteni, load me up, right? Fill me up. Right. Kiderech, kiderech shemalitin et hagamal. In the manner that one feeds a camel is a special verb for feeding a camel. Sheyishpoch et hatavshil derech pi b'lo lechem. That one pours the cooked food by way of the mouth without bread. Okay. Achra'a Yaakov, sorry. This is not working. Hang on. I'm sorry, ladies. Not ladies. Everybody. I have to fix it. Okay, here we are. Achra'a Yaakov shehu derech bal'anim ra'avtanim. But Yaakov saw this way of eating is the way of people who gulp their food down, who are starving. Al Kain, we would say gluttons, like people who don't eat in a civilized manner. Therefore, he gave him bread and the soup. To hint to him that he had asked improperly, like the orders given by a starving person, but rather, ach, that he should eat slowly with bread. Like people eat, not like animals eat. And here again, in this small detail, the way that the Alshich sort of sets up our understanding of what's happening here is that, bread requires preparation. Bread is requires slowing down to eat. You can't just gulp it down. You have to chew it. You have to swallow it. You have to eat it relatively slowly compared to, let's say, just slurping down some liquid. And that's the way Esav eats. Esav says, just pour it in, like sometimes you watch teenage boys inhale a meal and you think, did they even taste that? Right? Did it go in at all? Eating with bread, Yaakov is the same way he's the one who cooks the soup for those who are mourning. Yaakov makes bread and he serves with bread. He's sending Esav a message about slowing down and delaying gratification a little bit. Okay. Od kibein kibein v'Yaakov natan le'Esav lechem unezid adashim. The text is also telling us, it also wishes to tell us, that Yaakov gave Esav bread and the lentil soup, ach lo yayin, but he didn't give him wine. Now, this is important because this is the Alshich at his Parshanut best. This is the kind of detail he pays attention to, and it's very revealing. What does it say? He gave him bread and lentil soup, and then it says about Esav, Vayochal, he ate, Vayesht, he drank, right? Vayakam, he got up, Vayelech, and he got up and left and abused the birthright. Now, in the ancient world, people didn't drink water much. Unless you were by a flowing stream and you knew that the water source was clean, well, water was not. People drank wine, right? So Yaakov gives Esav bread and meat, bread and lentil soup, but not wine. Kidai lo ad mimut achzariyuto, because the ruddiness of his cruelty was enough for him. Meaning, the danger is that if he gives him wine, he will further inflame that quality in Esav of ruddiness, of too much vitality, too much, which in Esav translates itself into cruelty. But here, even though Esau, Yaakov didn't give him bread, he didn't give him wine, he ate. He drank wine of his own. He drank from his own wine, which Yaakov did not give him. So in other words, Esau, it's interesting. He comes back from the field exhausted and hungry. But he's carrying wine. He's carrying wine. And that's also sort of revealing. And it's a detail again. Now, I could hear the Rashbam saying to, I mean, the Rashbam was well before the Al Sheikh, but I could hear him saying to the Al Sheikh, it doesn't say wine or it doesn't say water because it doesn't have to be mentioned. Of course, Yaakov gave him something to drink as well. But the Al Sheikh is focusing on that detail. That he had wine, but he did not have food with him. Okay, so that leads us to his next thing, the next thing that he notices here, which is that there would be people of a legal turn of mind who would have room here to question or dispute of the sale of the Bechorah. Ki Esav lo yada shovi ha-Bechorah ve'erka. Okay, so in other words, let's think about this for a moment. The Al Sheikh is saying, we have room here, though, to launch a kind of defense of Esav here, a defense of Esav and the question of a forced sale or a problematic sale, what we would call a mekach tov, a mistaken deal, right? That you could say. Esav had no idea of the true value of the Bechorah and its worth. Kadesha to'il mechila. I'm sorry. Let me break that up again differently. It gets too long. He doesn't know the value of the Bechorah. Kadesha to'il mechila. So that it would be possible for him to change his mind. At least until he could go to the study hall of Shem and Eber or to some house of law, right? Lishol to ask. Od yadonituya lachzobo. He would still have time to change his mind. Okay, in other words, look, let's think about what just happened here. This whole deal gets settled very, very quickly. He comes in, he says, you want to sell? He says, okay, I'll sell. He sells, he gives him a meal, da, 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 boom, 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 boom. And Esau has not had time to think about the value of what he has sold. And if he were to go to, or to have time to go to a court of law, he would have room. There would be an argument here that he could change his mind about the deal. For this reason, the text says, "Una ki vitela mimenu." You have to see that this argument is null and void. Because after he ate the cooked food, shato, and after he drank, kam v'halachlo, he got up and he went. Uvaze. And he despised the birthright, gam acharechem, even afterwards. Vizehu, that's why the pasuk says, vayakam vayelech, vayivez Esav et habechorah, and he got up and he left, and Esav despised the birthright, ki gam acharei lechto, vayafsholo lishol. And because even after he'd left, and it would have been possible for him to question what he had done, Lo shat libo, he did not pay attention, rak vayivez. He only despised the bechorah v'chulei, ki gamal v'hakinyan v'hikna legamrei, because he finished and he had sold it completely. In other words, he gets up and he goes back to his life. And now he's not coming in straight from the field. He has a minute to think about it. He's eaten, he's drunk, he's made his decision. You might expect him to come back in the morning and say, "Hey, Yaakov, we need to discuss this deal we made." But no, there's no regret here. Now, this is in distinction to the I think it's the Hamek Dabar who says he did regret selling the Bechorah, or perhaps and the Hamek Dabar doesn't say this. Perhaps he regretted not asking more for the Bechorah, for the birthright. But here, according to the Alshich, it's very clear to the Alshich that Esav has no interest in the Bechorah. Okay, so let's take a look now at the Malbim, and we're gonna sort of zip through this. The Malbim's take on this and is very straightforward, and also I think very interesting. Vayezed Yaakov. Yaakov is cooking soup. Inyan ha-bechorah sha-bechor haya nigdal avodat Hashem. The idea of the birthright is that the firstborn is separated to the service of God. The yeter habanim hayu oskim inyanei ha'olam, and the rest of the children would be engaged in taking care of worldly matters. Okay, vigam al ha'bechor haya mutal hanagat habayit, and also the firstborn had the obligation of conducting the household. To support his father and his mother and the members of his household. Okay. Now, we saw several different views of what this Bechorah is. One understanding that of Rashi's is that the Bechorah is the inheritance of basically the Kuhuna, right? The priesthood, the service of Hashem. We saw others who say the birthright was a double portion in the father's worldly goods, which Esav doesn't care about because he doesn't think he's going to get live long enough to get that. This reading of the Malbim is that the Bechorah had two implications. One is the eldest child would be dedicated to the service of Hashem. Remember, before Chet HaEgel, before the sin of the golden calf, the firstborn did have that role, right? And that's why the firstborn children of all of the men of all of the tribes are swapped over with the Kohanim and Leviim after Chet HaEgel. And so that's one part of it. What would the rest of the people be doing in the family? They would be engaged in worldly matters. And along with this privilege of serving Hashem, the Bechor had the responsibility to support his father and mother and the members of his household. That's also why, and this is also in many cultures, you see this, that the oldest brother has a special status in the family. And he has authority akin to the authority of the father. Like if your parents are gone and your older brother disapproves of your marriage or thinks that you shouldn't move away or wants you to do X, Y, or Z, you have to do it. We even have that idea of kibud abaim extends to some extent in halacha to the oldest son. My brother never tried. Three sisters, you're just not going to win on that one. But anyway, that's the idea. V'Yaakov lo nitzavah ha'bechorah ba'avur she'yirash pishnayim or ba'avur ha'kavod. Yaakov did not desire the birthright because it would enable him to inherit double or because he wanted the honor. Rak she'ratzah shu'yeh ha'yoresh me'habrachot ha'elokiyot be'inyanim ha'nafshiyim, but rather he wanted to inherit the divine blessings in spiritual matters. He wanted to inherit Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because he saw that Esav was not fitting for this. And Esav himself, he didn't take the chiyuv he distanced himself from the obligations that are placed upon the firstborn, and he despised the birthright. Kemoshe, as it says, Vayezed Yaakov Nazid. Yaakov is cooking soup. Shehanazid Machal Bnei Habayit Nazad Yaakov. Yaakov brewed the food for the people in the household to eat. Vizeh Hayam Mutal Al Esav. This was incumbent upon Esav. V'lo ratzah litasek ba ki haya ish sadeh. And he did not want to engage in this because he was a man of the field. Another way to put it is this. Grandfather has passed away. Father is mourning. Who should, like, take charge of the proper conduct of the mourning, the food for the mourners, the way the household should be run? Who's supposed to be doing that? The firstborn. Who does it? Yaakov. Esav is a man of the field. He is not a man of the house. You can't see if had Yaakov had a sister or Esav had had a sister. It would be hard to picture Esav worrying about marrying off his sisters or taking care of the orphaned children of his brothers, right? This is not Esav. Esav is a man of the field. He's not domestic. And I think that the setting here, it's true, by the way, that he does bring his father gifts of game. But that's because he has a special relationship with his father and he wants his father's approval. But I think it is sort of emblematic that the scene here opens with Yaakov doing something very, very domestic, right? And Esav coming from hunting, coming from the field. Uvifrat, especially since lechazal, according to Chazal, shahaya sudat habra'a almot Abraham, this was a suda, a mourner's meal of condolence after the death of Abraham. If you follow that chazal to its conclusion, he didn't bother himself mourning over the death of his grandfather. He just came from the field. Sheba ayef min haretzach v'hashod, he came back exhausted from murder and robbery. How could he be the holy son or the one who is going to run the household? Okay. So then Yaakov says, sell me your birthright, like the day. When Yaakov saw that the birthright was not fitting for him, he said, sell it like the day. רצונו לומר, כפי שאתה מתנהג היום, ואתה מבזה את הבכורה ואינך רוצה בה. According to the way you're conducting yourself today, and you are despising the birthright, the responsibilities of the birthright, and you don't want it, מיכה אותה לי, sell it to me. It's almost like saying, Esav, here's a snapshot of you right now. Do you look to yourself like a person today, right now, in this moment in time? Do you look like a person who wants the bechora? You don't want it. Give it to me. Okay, he's giving you, I could spend time on the grammar, but I'm going to skip it because I'm sure you don't want to hear it. Okay. Amar michra ke'urenshin. Okay. Let's go on. He says, the word michra implies that it's already sold to me, right? You've already sold it to me. She'encha mitnaheg ba, you're not conducting yourself with regard to it. And here's the image that follows now that the Malbim uses to talk about what the situation is like. This is similar to someone who sees his friend about to throw a purse into the sea. Umivakesh sheyim kerehu lo bad lechem unezid adashim. And he asks him to sell him the purse for just bread and a mess of soup. Sheim ze miramet chabero. Rakimatil min haifkel. This is not tricking, fooling his friend, but rather he's saving something from hefkerut, from being abandoned. Now here I just want to stop and sort of make a something of a sociological point here, a historical point. We know that the story of the mechirat ha-bechora and the stealing of the brachot for b'nei ha-gola, certainly for European Jews, is a very sore point, right? The story of the relationship between Yaakov and Esav, I may have mentioned this before, Here in Eretz Yisrael, and especially among Eidot HaMizrach, among people who come from Middle Eastern countries, the painful story is the story of the relationship between Yitzchak and Yishmael. For Jews of the Gola in Europe, in Eastern Europe, places like that, Jews who did not, or let's put the non-Jewish world with which we in the Ashkenazi world struggled, was the world of Esav's descendants, right? So is it a lot of, there's also a lot of anti-Semitic stereotype. There are stereotypes that attach this image of Yaakov tricking Esav into selling the Bechorah. He's too hungry to question the price. Yaakov steals the blessings from Esav. It's a sore point. It's a sore point. It's part of the image of the tricky Jew. It's deeply entrenched in Western culture, as opposed to Yitzchak and Ishmael are seen as rivals in a very different way. So, you know, the Islamic version of Akedat Yitzchak has Ishmael on the altar, right? Or the idea that Abraham trained Ishmael in his ways. That's the image that Middle Eastern Jews or here in Eretz Yisrael, that's the thing we struggle with, right? Because the Jewish relationship with the non-Jewish world is obviously a sore point, or has been for many hundreds, thousands of years, right? There's a tension living as a minority and even not living as a minority. Here even there's an inheritance of tension, stereotyping, pain, all of those things surrounding the relationship on the one hand with Esav and on the other hand with Yaakov. Now the Malbim is affected by that. The Malbim is the 19th century. And the Malbim does not read this story as the Rashbam does, the Rashbam and others. The Rashbam says, the sale of the Bechorah was, give me money, I'll give you money, give me the Bechorah, and here's a meal. It's almost like the meal gives him the idea of saying, this is a good time to negotiate the sale of the birthright. The Malbim doesn't say that. The Malbim sees it in a completely different way. And if we go back to the screen now, back to the sources, I think this will be very clear. He says, and he bases it on something in the grammar, which I'm not going to trouble you with because it would take too long to explain. But he says, look, from Yaakov's perspective, the Bechorah was already his. The birthright was his because he wanted it. And Esav wasn't using it, so to speak. He wasn't taking the responsibilities associated with the Bechorah. So what he says to him is, it already belongs to me, or right, yeah, give it to, let's make it official. Let's seal the deal, right? Let's make it official. And this is like someone who sees his friend throwing a purse into the ocean, into the sea. And he says, you know what? If you're throwing it away, sell it to me. I'll give you a bowl of soup and a piece of bread. This is not tricking the person. It is saving something that has been cast aside. Which means what? Esav was going to cast aside the Bechorah. He was not intending to fulfill the conditions of the Bechorah, to do what a Bechor has to do, to do what a firstborn has to do. Yaakov says, if you're throwing it away, I'll take it from you. I'll give you something for it, even if it's not something important. You're throwing it away anyway. And I think that's the way that the Malbim sort of deals with this question. So Esav says the following. Vayomer Esav, and Esav says, Hine anochi holech lamut, I am going to die. Lama zeli bechorah, what do I need the birthright for? Esav heshiv lo, Esav answered him, Halo habechorah hi davar shelo yimtza adam yimena shum hana'a ba'olam hazeh. Bechorah is something from which a person will get no benefit in this world, right? There's no benefit to the bechorah. Rak achar hamot hamavet ba'olam haba. It only will give benefit after death in olam haba. Al ze amal, ve'et she'elech lamut, lama ze li b'chora? At an hour that I am going to die, what do I need b'chora for? Ani ritzono lomar, which is to say, ani eini ma'amin b'olam haba klal. I don't believe in olam haba. I don't think there is life after death. I don't think it fits with who Esav is. You live in the moment, you live while you're alive, then you die, and you're gone. You haven't made any kind of impact on the world or done anything of spiritual significance. You're not into the whole soul concept here. Vidati, and my opinion, my belief is, she'elech lamut v'lo echye od ba'olam haba. I'm going to die, and I will not live again in the world to come. V'imkein lama ze li b'chora, asher ze li b'chora. And he said, why should I, what do I need the b'chora for, if that's what my b'chora is? Ritzono lomar, which is to say, he says, lama ze li b'chora, why is this for me a b'chora? Shezed dehainu hamavet, that is to say, this, i.e. death, umasha acharav, yihye b'chora. And what happens afterwards is my b'chora. I'm going to die. And what happens afterwards is my b'chora, which is exactly zero. Ukumosha amru chazal shekafal b'triyat hametim. He did not believe in the resurrection of the dead. And then Yaakov goes on and says, make it a promise to me. And here the Malbim repeats some of the ideas we've seen before, that basically, you can't take possession of something that doesn't actually exist in the world. So he wants it to be an oath rather than a purchase, right? He wants to reinforce the purchase with an oath. And, okay. And there were those who say he's citing the Rashbams, those who say he actually sold it to him for money. And Yaakov gave Esav, now here's this very nice reading he does. Yaakov gave Esav bread and soup. Why? Shemeata hutal al Yaakov parnasat habayit. Because now who's responsible for feeding the members of the household? Esav's gotten rid of the bechora, the responsibility of feeding the members of the household. So who has to feed whom here? Yaakov has to feed Esav. And the text tells us that Esav did not regret his deed at all. Even after he had eaten, he despised the birthright. And from this we learn, from this it is explained, he did not sell the bechora because he was starving or because he really, really wanted that food. Because if he had sold it out of an immediate desire for food or out of extreme hunger, he would have regretted it after he was no longer hungry. But rather, the bechora was negligible in his eyes. And he was happy that Yaakov took it away from him. Okay. So that's the sale of the Bechora. There's still a lot. We could spend another few hours on this topic, but we're going to move on to the next topic, which is the Brachot. And here people have really quite a lot of trouble with this. It's a difficult piece. We're going to start. Let me just share. I hope everybody got... You saw the source sheet up on the site, right? It was posted. It wasn't posted. Okay. If it wasn't posted, I'm sure Natalie will post it later, but I'm going to share it with you now. We are going to start by reading the psukim and asking some questions, and then we will start to look at, hold on. Am I in the right place? No, I am not in the right place. Hold on. Stop share. Share screen, Hamirachot. Okay, it's quite a long chapter. We're not going to do the whole chapter. We're going to do most of it. The story starts, we're going to read the Psukim. We're going to start by reading the verses and asking some of the questions that I'm sure you have. I don't know if we'll be able to answer all of them, but that's where we're going to go. And I'll try and leave questions at the end. And the first parshan we're going to look at is the Sfarno. Okay. So as a run-up to the story, we have to, the end of the previous parak tells us that we're after the sale of the Bechora, and time has passed. Exactly how old were they at the sale of the Bechora is not clear, though you can do the calculations following Seder Olam Rabbah. They were not children, but they were not, you know, men in their 40s. Now they are men in their 40s, or they've turned 40, and this is where the story starts, or open. This is the preamble to the story we're about to read. Vahi Esav ben Arba'im Shana, and Esav was 40 years old, which means also that Yaakov is 40 years old. They're twins. Vayikach Isha, and he took a wife, et Yehudit bat Be'eri Hachiti, ve'et Bosmat bat Elon Hachiti. Yehudit, the daughter of Be'eri, the Hittite, and Bosmat, the daughter of Elon, the Hittite. As opposed to Abraham and Yitzchak, who take wives from back in Mesopotamia, wives from their original ancestral Semitic ancestry, Esav marries out. Esav marries local women, Hittite women. They're part of the Canaanite tribes. And it's almost, I mean, Rashi sort of picks up on this. It's almost a little ironic. Vaykach Isha, he took a wife, and then we're told he took two wives, right? He has two wives. Vaykach Isha might be read as he got married, but he takes two wives. Vatiyena morat ruach liyitzchak ulirivka. And they were I'll translate it the easy way, a bitterness of spirit to Yitzchak and to Rivka. Now, this introduction here, I think, is important because it does set us up for asking a question that is going to occur to all of us, I think, immediately. Why does Yitzchak want to bless Esav? Why does he want to give precious blessings to Esav if Esav is a Rasha, if Esav is wicked? And one of the indications we have, and there are other indications in the text, one of the indications that we have that Yitzchak did not think Esav was the best boy in the yeshiva is this one, right? Esav is married to women who are a source of bitterness or a source of, you know, the spirits of Yitzchak and Rivka are disturbed by these women. They're not happy with these women. So that introduction, the reason I'm mentioning this is that introduction tells us something about why this story is so strange, right? And you know, why several of my students have asked, why not just give both sons blessings? I mean, what's the big deal? What's going on over here? Okay, so let's go on. And it was when Yitzchak grew old, his eyes grew dim from seeing. And he called Esav, his older son. And he said to him, my son. And he said, here I am. Okay, so this is reminiscent of the Akedah, right? Where Abram says, God says to Abram, Abraham, Abram, he says, Hineni. Here also, Esav. This is going to be an important and a solemn moment for Esav. He said, I have grown old and I don't know the day of my death. Rashi explains here that, of course, no one knows the day of their death. So what this is a fairly obvious statement. But rather, Yitzchak is coming to an age where he's close to the age of death of his mother. And he doesn't know if he's going to live as long as his father or he's only going to live as long as his mother. But he's at the age where a person starts to think about putting their house in order, starting to, you know, wrap things up or settle affairs of a state and, you know, setting their children up in life. Vata, and now, Sana kelecha telecha v'kashtecha. Pick up, please, your vessels, your tools, and your quiver and your bow, quiver for holding arrows. V'tzei hasadeh v'tzuda litzayit. And go out to the field and hunt me hunting. V'haseli mat'amim ka'asher ahavti, and make for me delicacies the way I like. V'havi'ali v'ochela, and bring to me and I will eat. V'avul t'varechecha nafshi b'terem mamut, in order that my soul will bless you before I die. Okay, so this is a little strange. Let's think about this. Let's think about the situation here. When we compare these blessings to the blessings that Yaakov gives his sons, first gives to Yosef and then all of his sons later, before he dies, the blessings he gives to Menashe and Ephraim, when Moshe Rabbeinu blesses Bnei Yisrael, we just have to ask, what's with the meal? Why is he asking Esav to bring him a meal before he gives a blessing? Okay. Now, what's that about? And we're going to see how the Mefarshim handle that question. But it's clear that he's intending to bless only Esav, which leads to another question. Why is he only going to bless Esav, right? When we see Yaakov blessing his sons, and in Yosef's case, his grandsons, he doesn't bless one to the exclusion of the other. Okay, let's go on. Okay. B'Rivka shomat b'daber Yitzchak el Esav b'no, and Rivka was listening when Yaakov spoke with Esav his son. Ba'elech Esav hasadeh latzud zayid l'avi. And Esav went to the field to hunting to bring. V'Rivka amra el Yaakov bena, and Rivka said to Yaakov her son, Lemo. There's some interesting grammatical things going on here, but I'm not going to make you crazy about that. Hinei shamati et avicha medaber el Esav achicha lemor. Here I heard your father speaking to Esav your brother, saying, Havia li tzayid vaseli matamim v'ochela. Bring me hunting and make me delicacies and I will eat. Va'avarechecha lifnei Hashem lifnei moti. And it will bless you before Hashem, before my death. And Rivka basically says to Yaakov, I was listening and I heard. And your father's about to give a blessing. And of course, the biggest question that we have to ask with regard to this next part of the story is in Pasuk Chet, Vata b'ni shma mikoli, and now my son, listen to my voice, Lasher ani mitzava otach, to that which I will command you. Lech na el hatzon, go now to the sheep, v'kach li misham shnei gedaye izim tovim, and take from me there two good kids, and I will make for them, I'll make them into a delicacy like your father likes. And your father, you'll bring it to your father, he will eat, in order that he should bless you before his death. Okay, if the story were not so familiar, and if we did not have, of course, our picture of Rivka Imenu as a righteous woman, this is a fairly astonishing thing to do here. What Rivka wants her son to do, and he's not a child, he's a man, right? What she wants her son to do is deliberately deceive her blind husband, right? And go in there and get the blessings that are intended for his brother. And one might think this is not going to end well, right? Why does Rivka do this? So that's I think the biggest question that we have to ask here. We have questions about Yaakov as well. And we have some questions about Yitzchak, but the big question is, why does Rivka engage in this deceit? And by the way, we don't see her criticized by the biblical text for this deceit at all.
Question to you, why did she ask Yaakov to get the two izim? Why she didn't do it by herself?
Maybe she didn't want to be seen to be doing it, or maybe because, it's a hassle to bring two goats from the flock.
Or maybe she
The big
wanted him
problem,
actually to be active
maybe,
that.
but I think the problem here is this. Any way you slice it, the worst thing Yaakov does is not getting these two izim, right? That's not the big problem here. She sends him to get the izim. She gets him to send him to get the kids, the baby goats, but she's about to send him to deceive his father. I mean,
He
which is,
acts with Azut Netzach.
well, that's not the Midrash says. It's something else, that he was shaking and weeping and terrified. But anyway, let's keep going. Let's read the Psukim first. Vayomer Yaakov el, I got the pun. Okay. Vayomer Yaakov el Rivka imo, and Yaakov said to Rivka his mother, what do we expect him to say? What's the thing we expect Yaakov to say? Ima, I can't do this. That's what we expect Yaakov to say. I can't do this, right? It's wrong. That's what we expect Yaakov to say. That's not what he says. Hen Esav achi ish, sorry, my mouse is giving me a little trouble here. Hen Esav achi ish sa'ir v'anochi ish chalak. Here, Esav, my brother, is a hairy man, and I am a smooth man. Ulayim usheni avi, perhaps my father will stroke me. Vayiti be'enav kimit ta'atea, and I will be in his eyes like someone who tricks him. Ve'heveti alai kilala v'lo v'racha, and I will bring upon myself a curse and not a blessing. So, what's wrong with this picture? What's the difficulty that we have here? We expect Yaakov to refuse. In fact, arguably, Yaakov is obligated to refuse. The fact that his mother tells him to do something which is ostensibly clearly wrong, it's an act of deception against his father. And Yaakov is the Ish Emet. He represents truth, right? In the pantheon of the Avot, right? He doesn't say that. He's just worried about being caught. Okay, so we have to deal with that question too. So what is Rivka's answer? Vatomer lo imo, and his mother said to him, Alay kilelat chabini, your curse will be on me, my son. But listen to my voice and go and take the kids for me. Take the meat for me. And he went and he took and he brought them to his mother. You could argue, why didn't she send a servant? And his mother made delicacies like his father liked. Vatikach Rivka et bigdei Esav bena hagadol hachamudot asher ita b'bayit, and Rivka took the clothing of the good clothing of her older son that were with her in the house. Vatalbeshet Yaakov bena hakatan, and she clothed Yaakov, her younger son. So in other words, she takes. Rashi asks, what is his Shabbos suit doing in his mother's closet? He has two wives. And the answer is he didn't trust his wives to not sell his Shabbos suit. But okay. His good clothing is in his mother's house. Ve'et orot gedayah izim hilbisha al yadav, and the skins of the goats she clothed onto his arms, ve'al chelkat tzavarav, and on the portion of his neck. And she put the delicacies and the bread that she had made in the hands of Yaakov, her son. Okay, so the Sfarno explains. Why does Yaakov, Yitzchak, sorry, why does Yitzchak ask for delicacies? רצה ממת תמים כדי שיתעשה בכיבוד אב, ובזה תחול עליו הברכה. Why does Yitzchak want him to make delicacies? Because he wants Esav to engage in the mitzvah of honoring his father, and in the merit of this, the blessing would rest upon him. Let's keep going. Ki gam shelo hikir begodel rishol shel Esav, because although he did not recognize the greatness of Esav's evil, mikol makom lo chashav oto l'ra'ui shetachul alav ota habracha shehaya b'libo l'bracho. In any event, he did not think he was fitting for the blessing that he had in mind to give him would rest upon him. L'lachein, okay, so why does he want the meal? The meal is something akin to what is Yitzchak want. He wants Esav to do something that will make him worthy of the blessings he wants to bestow upon him. Because although Yitzchak did not realize exactly who Esav was, he did know that he was not worthy of the kind of blessing he wanted to give him. And so he's trying to sort of elevate Esav in this way. V'lachein, and therefore, kisheberach Yaakov achar kach, when he blessed Yaakov after this, sheyadavo shehu ra'uy lebracha, when he knew that he was, since he knew that he was worthy of a blessing, lo sha'al mat'amim, he did not ask for delicacies, v'lo bikesh davar, and he did not ask for anything. Uvechol techev b'omro v'kel shakai yivarechotcha. And blessed him immediately in saying, and the Lord will bless you. What's the Sfarna referring to? Well, if you go to the end of the parak, if we get to the end of the parak, what happens is Yitzchak gives Yaakov a blessing too. He gives Yaakov a blessing in the guise of Yaakov. Remember, this is not a mistaken blessing. If you go to the end of Parak Chafzayin, which I suggest you do, after things start to blow over here, Perchav Zayin Pasuk, I'm sorry, it's Perchav Chet Pasuk Aleph. Rivka has told Yitzchak she wants Yaakov to go back to her hometown to find a wife there. She doesn't want him to marry a Canaanite woman. Yitzchak agrees. And what does it say in Perchav Chet Pasuk Aleph, Genesis 28:1? Vayikra Yitzchak el Yaakov, and Yitzchak called Yaakov, vayivarech oto, and he blessed him, vayitzavehu, and he commanded him, vayomer lo, lo tikach isha mibnot Kanaan, and he said, do not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan, like Esav's wives that he's not happy with. Kum lech padena aram beta betuel avi imecha, rise up and go to Padan Aram, to Betuel, the house of Betuel, your mother's father, v'kach lecha misham isha mibnot Lavan achi imecha, and take for yourself from there a wife from the daughters of Lavan, your uncle, your mother's brother. Now what do we get? V'kel shakai yibarech otcha, and the Lord Shakai will bless you, v'yafuchacha v'yarbecha, and he will make you fruitful and numerous, Vayita the Kahalamim, and you will be a congregation of peoples. Viyitem lecha et birkat Abraham, and he will give to you the blessing of Abraham. Lecha ulezaracha itach, to you and to your children after you. Lirishtecha et eretz megurecha, that you inherit the land of your sojourning, asher natan elokim Abraham, that the Lord gave to Abraham. Now this is very interesting. After this whole story is over, when Yaakov when Yitzchak is sending Yaakov away, get out of town, go marry a girl who is from our Semitic background, right? Don't marry a Canaanite woman. And it's not clear that Yitzchak realizes that Yaakov also has to get out of town because Esav is planning to kill him, right? He gives him a blessing. And he does not preface this blessing with any statement about please go bring me something to eat. Please do something for me so that the blessing will come upon you. And this becomes kind of interesting because it complicates our story a little bit. There are two blessings in this story. One is the blessing that Rivka wants Yaakov to steal from Esav. Essentially, that's what it comes down to. And the other is the blessing that Yitzchak very freely gives to Yaakov. And the Sfarno takes these two parts of the story here and he says, why does Yitzchak want Esav to bring him something to eat? Because he wants to give him a means of earning or deserving the blessing that he wants to give him. And here I will just skip down to the Ora Chaim, who says something quite beautiful. We're going to read this again, but just as it pertains to what we're going to read it from the beginning. But here I just want to read it as it pertains to this question. The reason that Yitzchak wanted to bless Esav, who was wicked, he thought that by means of the brachot, he would be changed to good qualities, and he would improve his ways. The tzaddikim are distressed. They are in pain when their children do wickedness. He was trying to make Esav better. And here's the real chiddush of the Or HaChaim. Ve'efshal shehaya mogil. And it might have worked. And it might have worked. Now, we're going to come back to the Or HaChaim before we read the Malbim and read the whole thing and try to understand what the Or HaChaim is saying here. But one answer to the question of why Yitzchak wants to give Esav the brachot, at least according to the Or HaChaim, is because he's hoping the brachot will be transformative for Esav, will turn Esav into the person who deserves his birth order, who was born first. And that's what we're going to have to explore in greater detail, Be'ezrat Hashem, next week. I'll take some questions. Please raise your hand if you have a question.
Any questions? Isn't being nice to Esav like being nice to Hamas and Gaza?
No, Esav's his son.
Yeah, but Esav is the ancestor of the Romans who destroyed the Beit.
But he's not, right now he's his son. Right now he's his son. And perhaps the Or HaChaim says, had Esav received the blessings, perhaps he wouldn't have been. He wouldn't have been the ancestor of the Romans, right? Okay, Susanna, yeah.
I have an observation.
You have a what? An observation.
Mm-hmm. I think that Yaakov and Esav are actually identical twins. They're, one is ruddy and the other isn't. There's a phenomenon.
One's hairy and the other isn't. No, they're not identical.
There's a phenomenon of twin to twin transfusion when with identical twins, when one hugs the placenta and gets more blood, and it can be a physiologic problem, and that's why one is ruddy and the other. But also their voices tend to be the same. So that could be why Yitzchak didn't recognize, their voices.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that, because when Yaakov is worried, he's afraid of the hairiness giving him away. He's not afraid of the voice. And we'll have to talk about that. By the way, that happens with regular brothers and sisters, or sometimes even parents and their children, that they sound very, very much alike. How many times have you answered the phone or called someone and said hi, and you think you're speaking to the mother?
I only had a brother, so that was never. Right. But it's also, a lesson in how inheritance is not destiny, kind of.
We're going to talk about this because I don't think they're identical twins. There's a whole discussion about Yaakov and Esav around the Seir la'Azazel of the Seir Chatat la'Hashem and the Seir la'Azazel, If you're interested, I could bring that midrash. It'll take us a little far afield, but not very far afield. But I want to make sure I get, Susanna, hold on to any other questions. Write them down. I just want to get there are two more people who have questions here. Joyce, you had a question.
Yeah. So does anybody ever discuss when Rivka hears Yaakov, when Rivka hears Yitzchak preparing to give the blessing to Esav, rather than her, you know, starting this whole deception thing with the other son, Yaakov, why doesn't she just say to Yitzchak, listen, dear, let's talk about this. Like, Esav's the wrong one.
And we'll talk about that.
Maybe she mentioned that she had was given prophecy, I think, during the pregnancy that, like,
we'll
she
talk about she that.
To work out.
We'll talk about that. There's a very, very interesting answer that Nitziv gives to this question. What seems to be very clear, though, on any level, is that if she goes in and says to Yitzchak, you have to give the blessing to Yaakov because Esav is a Rasha, what will Yitzchak say?
Well, all right, but I mean, so...
No. What will he say? What will he say?
I mean, maybe they didn't discuss things the way husband and wife...
We're gonna talk about that. There isn't an interesting approach that the Nativ takes to this, but he's going to say, take it up with God, honey. Right? Who is Esav here? Who determined that Esav would be the firstborn?
Makes sense.
It's not discretionary, right? This is not something, you know, this isn't like the roles here are very, very fixed. We're going to talk about that aspect of it. We have a whole piece about that. We'll talk about it. Okay. Any other questions or we're good? There's a lot more. Maybe we'll even do an extra session on this. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, Jolene, did you have a question? I can't hear you. You're muted. Now you disappear.
It's just an observation. Okay, on Esau, is that I see him as one of those hunters that goes out hunting and boasts and why he, you know, wants to, you know, the food poured down his throat, and he boasts about how dangerous it is going hunting. And I hunt and I live in grizzly bear country and I've been doing this my entire life, and I'm far less danger, and it would have been true in those times too, if I'm hunting than when I'm going out with the goats or the sheep. Okay, so we only have to think about the boys in India going out with the sheep and the goats who get eaten by tigers, or the women who get eaten by tigers to get the water. So it isn't so much that Esau, I felt, was really, truly in danger as much as he was boasting, you know, bravado.
He hunts recklessly. He's a reckless person.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
People who are reckless are in danger if they're driving a car, like for anything. Right. Yes. He's a reckless person. He's a hunter who's reckless, and that is dangerous.
Yes, I agree with that. And I just wanted to make the point that shepherds are in more danger in general from lions and wolves when they go out with their flocks. Because all
so that's an interesting question. There aren't tigers in Eretz Yisrael. There are bears in there, or then there were bears and lions. But I would imagine that shepherds also know the tricks of their trade too. And would, let's say, abandon an animal that's attacked and then move, right? Move with the flock. I think, you know, everything has dangers, but I think the difference is Esav is a dangerous person. He operates with danger. That's maybe he even likes danger. He's ruddy, right? Okay. Annie, and then I must close shop here.
Wanted to ask, given Esav's character, why would you believe in him when he took an oath to swear that he's selling him the, could he not say afterwards, you know, I didn't really swear, or like, how come he believed his oath?
Well, so it's not clear that he does believe his oath. Remember, this whole transaction takes place just between the two of them, right? It's not like they're going to appear in a court of law. I think the best guarantee that Yaakov has for the birthright, if you can even buy a birthright, that's the question. Can you even buy a birthright? But the best guarantee that Yaakov has is that he understands that Esav really doesn't want it. And when he says, Hishav Ali, you know, promise me, it could be that part of what he's saying is no backsies, right? You know, don't change your mind. But he can rely on that because Esav doesn't really want it. If you don't, right. You know, again, the image that the Malbim uses of someone is about to throw his purse into the sea and you say, okay, give it to me. I'll give you this water bottle. You know, I'll give you whatever I give you. You know, don't throw it in the sea. I'll take it. I'll use it. Right? I think that's the best guarantee that he has here. Okay, everybody. See you next week, Bezrat Hashem. Mesorot Tovot. Okay? All right. Bye. Let me just close this. One second. Bye. Laila Tov. Or for me. Have a
Thank
nice day.
You. Thank you.